Today, we take a deep dive into the shadowy world of cyber criminals and their operations in South Africa. We speak to Tiaan Lombard, a cybersecurity and intelligence expert. Welcome, Tiaan.
Good afternoon, Chris. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thanks for joining us. Let us start by asking you to define cyber crime and cybersecurity for us briefly.
Cybercrime, cybersecurity. Security is the ability to lock people out of your house. That is the lock that you put on your door. It's how I protect my passwords, how I keep my network safe, my firewalls. That is what cyber security is all about. Cybercrime is obviously, you know, breaching those types of systems, etc., breaking the lock, getting access to, you know, to your house. And cyber intelligence, on the other hand, is how this information is being used. Where is it being used? How is it being used? What is it being used for? Etc.
Okay. So who does cybercrime primarily and how do they do it?
Okay. Everybody in that sense. What is happening is cybercrime is being committed by your everyday wannabe. You know, I want to be a hacker. I want to learn how to hack. And we can download all sorts of tools, etc., from the internet. You know, that gives us access. But there's a more serious element to this because whatever is available to law enforcement, whatever is available to the general community outside, is also available to your bigger criminals, your cartels, call it that, you know, what they are today in South Africa. How it's committed is, you know, we all sit at home thinking, you know, who's going to want to hack me? What are you going to do with my information? And quite frankly, we are not the targets in that sense. Nobody is really interested in what you're, you know, keeping on your computer. Nobody wants to know about the photos of you feeding your cat, etc. But you are also affected, obviously, in the way of your business. If you need to gain access to, you know, any business or corporate institution or whatever institution it is out there, nobody wants to hack anymore. To give you the scenario, we've got if you got your house, you put a bigger lock on, you know, to make sure that nobody breaks in. You put burglar proofing and electric fences, etc., around your house. That is normally your security that you would implement. And the bigger the lock, the longer it takes to break the lock. So your security experts that's out there are mainly focusing on protecting your information, protecting your data, etc. But the problem comes, and most of your cybercrime is not committed via hacking. In fact, a very small percentage of that is being committed via hacking. Today, social engineering is a bigger danger. If I want to gain access to, let's call it a banking system or a judicial system, whatever the case may be, it's a matter of entering into the bank, leaving a flash drive, you know, in the toilet with a key holder and a couple of keys on it that not identifies me. And somebody somewhere is going to pick that device up and stick it into their computer. And at that moment, you are compromised. Now, you can order these devices online. You can put, you know, import them into South Africa. It's available to you, to me. Our law enforcement have got no clue how these devices work, how they are, you know, being packaged and shipped. And to give you an indication, Chris, you look at a little device like this. It is a USB communicator or a frequency modulator that you plug into your laptop that communicates with either a mouse or a keyboard or a combination of those two. And these are things that we use every day. You take a normal flash drive. We, as corporate companies, give these as gifts to people. We leave them lying around on table. Fancy gifts like a little light like this. You know, it's a little light that's a very fancy, cute gift when you go into, you know, one of these events or conferences where they have IT stuff and the guys give you a device like this as a nice little present. But this is just not just a normal device. This device, as you can see, at the end of it has a big little head. We have a USB flash drive, which is a normal flash drive that plugs into a computer, or, as I said, you know, a module that you use for controlling your keyboard. And this applies to charging cables, a phone charge cable, a charging cable for your devices, etc. By merely asking somebody, may I borrow your charger? That device has got what we call an OMG cable. That device is built in a keyboard and a USB flash drive. And the most dangerous thing about this is, or even this, is you plug it in, it's an innocent light that you plug into your computer. But built into this is a keyboard that the moment you plug it in, there's no security on your computer or on your system that says, listen, somebody is trying to access your computer, because you as the user need to use a keyboard to log into your computer. And the moment I put this device into my computer, that is a built-in little keyboard that sends commands, you know, to the computer that I'm logged into. So I don't need to anymore break into that computer via external mechanisms, breaking the network, going through firewalls. I already have a user in the bank, in the judicial system, in the police, wherever, that has already got access to that system. And all I needed to do was give him a device to plug in. I am now logged in with his credentials. I'm logged in with him having access to that computer. And the danger is that, as I said, these things can be ordered online. They sell them for, you know, a couple of $100 online. You can buy them on eBay, etc. We import them into South Africa, and we are using them, you know, for malicious use. The problem here comes, it is not the everyday person that wants to see what his wife is doing, or, you know, have a look at, as I said, your cat's photos. These are criminals, very, very serious criminals that know what the dangers of these things are and how to use them. Gaining access to your computer, the moment you've plugged this thing in, or the USB flash drive, it is a keyboard that now sends commands to your computer, and the computer thinks it's you sending those commands via a keyboard, which means I have now got full control of your computer system. I've got full control of your entire computer. I've got access to your emails. I've got access, if you've got stored on your computer or your browser, your details about your login details, I've got all that information. I've got access to your Facebook, your whatever you use your computer for, I have access to that. And that is where the dangers are lying. Now, this very same information, obviously, as I said, is being used by more dangerous people like your cyber criminals, etc., and your cartels, currently the biggest problem in South Africa.
Now, in which industries in South Africa are they most active?
All industries in South Africa is affected. You must understand that, as I said, when you've got a house and you put a lock on your house, there's always somebody wanting to break in. There's always somebody wanting to steal your TV or your bicycle or whatever it is that they can sell for money. The problem here is that the value that you can now achieve, you must remember our entire lives today is electronic. Our communications, our phones, our computer systems, everything today is electronics. And the dangers with this is that it being electronic, we can shut down power stations. It's been done with Stuxnet on, you know, infiltrating your hardware on your computer, you know, making it difficult for you to really be in control. Because if the computer tells you, you know, the cooler is running, the temperature is perfect, everything is fine, we listen to that computer and we make our decisions based on what the computer tells us. So if it tells us, you know, the systems are all running fine, as long as it's running fine, I am fine. Taking control of your hardware on your phone. Your phone can be switched on remotely. Your microphone can be switched on remotely. Your camera can be switched on remotely. Everything can be done remotely now on your phone. Your phone is just as big a danger because it's just another computer. For that matter, a banking terminal is another computer. An ATM is another computer. So these are all devices that's easily affected by cybercrime. So it is taking in every aspect it's happening. We've got it in home affairs. As I said, you take a duplicate person being registered on home affairs. That duplicate person is now roaming around in South Africa as a complete different person. The face might be the same, and that person is roaming around either with your information or with a completely new identification created, committing crime and then vanishing in the woodwork because that person does not really exist. It is a ghost on home affairs. We see this predominantly in NSFAS, the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, whereby you have ghost students created on home affairs platforms where this person is alive, is a real person, he's got a name, he's registered. And as long as that criteria is met, the National Student Financial Aid Scheme will fund it. It is happening in our universities. It is happening in every aspect. A big concern, for instance, is if you look at, you know, your small claims courts and these types of courts, where there's a small dispute. I owe you 100 rand and you take me to the small claims court. The small claims court says, can I please have the evidence? Can you please put this information for me on a flash drive? And you've got two, you know, people fighting over 100 rand. But the intent is not 100 rand. The court will say, well, Tian, give Chris 100 rand you owe her. We found you, you know, guilty, so please pay her. I say, fine. But prior to the trial, I've already loaded all the information trying to fight my little case onto a flash drive, which I've given the judicial system. And the magistrate, the judge, the master, whoever it is, plug that device into his computer. Your judicial system is compromised. You can imagine what access you have if I've got the ability to manipulate evidence, if I've got the ability to manipulate to make evidence go away or to create evidence. And that is where your big crime comes in.
So how often do you think this is happening, Dion?
It's happening permanently. You must understand computers have the ability to process 24/7. Your banking services, your network access, wherever you're communicating to, there is a permanent online availability. And as long as a computer is turned on, that computer has got the capacity to, you know, be utilized. When it comes to, you know, applications, let's call it brute force hacking, where you infiltrate the system, you load a little program on three or four servers, and those four servers will attack a specific target. Whether it's for, you know, being denial of service attacks or whether it is being hacking that system with consistently sending new passwords to try and gain access, a computer has the ability to do this 24/7. Humans go to sleep. We go to work in the morning from 8 until, you know, 5. You work, but it only takes 2 seconds to pick that device up, put it into your computer, and that from there on, it infects every other computer around you. It infects every other network, depending on what it is the criminal wants to achieve. So it is happening way more often than any other crime in South Africa, keeping in mind that our entire lives nowadays are focused around technology, are focused around systems and computer systems, data. It is not just, here's a house anymore, I can break in, I steal the TV and the TV is gone. You can steal multiple TVs over and over and over in the same house by having access on those systems. So the dangers in cybercrime is much, much, much higher. It's much more frequent than any other crime because it affects, first of all, as I said, it takes my entire life is on computer, is on electronic systems, is on databases, etc. And these, this information is permanently being accessed by criminals, by systems, and using it for their own benefit. not necessarily always exposing themselves.
So, yeah, describe to us how this is affecting South Africa and its citizens, Dion.
On a personal level, we all sit back and we say, you know, it can't touch me. It's nobody's really interested in what's going on my computer. Nobody's really interested in me having a conversation with my mom on the phone. But from a citizen point of view, as I said, you are the person going into the toilet, picking up the flash drive, sticking that into your computer. You are the person receiving the flash drive, the phone charging cable, the little fancy device like this. You are the person receiving that, and you are merely a tool in the middle of this entire operation. Once you have been compromised, and you don't even know you've been compromised, you have now plugged that device into a system, whether it's a banking system, whether it's at the Department of Justice, wherever you've plugged that in, that entire system, that entire organization has been compromised. And that is how it's affecting us, is in a personal level, not that much. I'm only being used. But when it comes to the systems in South Africa, we're now looking at judicial, we're looking at police, we're looking at education, we're looking at financial systems, we're looking at what operates this country, what runs this country. And today, the entire country relies on technology. We rely on computer systems. We rely on databases. Our courts rely on computer systems. Our industries relies on electronics managing these devices, whether it being PLCs or everything is affected by cybercrime. Bringing South Africa into a very, very serious light because of taking our financial system, for instance. South Africa is one of the best countries in the world when it comes to our banking system. So we have the expertise in South Africa with our banking systems, with our fancy technology that we've got. But as good as we are with, executing all these fancy technologies and systems that we've got, we've also got those very same criminals in South Africa utilizing that information or that. And the problem is they are more prone to using it than what our judicial system is able to, to fight this. We, as a police, we already know what the housebreakings look like. Any policeman knows how to handle a housebreaking. But the moment you enter into a cyber world, where you've got cyber crimes being committed, 90% of our police do not know how that crime has been committed. I have been, in many instances where I've testified in various, forums or judicial or legal systems where I've, been a witness, expert witness. You very quickly realize that the magistrate, the judge sitting there, the commissioner sitting there, does not have a clue what cybercrime is. You often have a case where the prosecutor does not understand how this happened, what happened. And then trying to explain to, the magistrate or the judge or these guys what exactly took place, how this happened, that becomes very complicated.
Now, where does this leave South Africa in the worldview? We've been grey-listed. How does cybercrime link to our grey listing, or does it?
Absolutely does, yes. If you look at South Africa currently, we are a country that is recognized worldwide at this moment as a country from which most of our financial crimes are taking place. Let's have a look at online crimes. You have got so many online scams, for instance, going on, whereby people are asking for your credit card details or, invest in this scheme or invest in that scheme. The company, is online for a few days, a few months, a few weeks until they get caught out, but they disappear in no time. And a lot of these crimes, if we look at, the MTI, the Ponzi schemes, all the different crimes happening in South Africa are originating in South Africa. And the rest of the world is looking at South Africa and saying, but hang on, there's a whole lot of financial crimes happening here. Now, making this worse is you're sitting with a judicial system that needs to fight this. When the judicial system does not understand this, it's not going to help either. If the policing does not understand this, it's not going to help. By not being able to fight it. You know, when it comes to cyber security, we've got what we call a red team and a blue team. Your red team would be the person trying to attack a system, gain access to the system, and the blue team would normally be the person trying to keep you out. That is your cybersecurity expert, knowing where to find you, how to trace you. And if you look at, you know, the red team, blue team scenario, South Africa currently is a red team. We are currently infiltrating the world. We are using South Africa as a platform, or as a, you know, we've got all the brilliant systems in place. We've got dedicated online 24/7 data centers. I look at African countries not having necessarily all those, you know, abilities and technologies or data center capability hosting in South Africa. That tells you how South Africa's infrastructure is. Now, if we as South Africans are sitting here and using our technology worldwide, you know, online is worldwide. If I place something online, you can pay with your credit card online. I've got your credit card details. I've taken your money, number one. And number two, I've got your credit card details. Here on forth, I can do whatever I want to with it. The problem is these are not just being done by small individuals. These are not done by private individuals. These are done by highly, highly skilled, organized cartels that knows that South Africa does not have the ability to stop this. We know that South Africa does not have the knowledge, really, in our policing system, judicial system, etc., you know, to combat this. And we are using this infrastructure and technology that we have in South Africa to really go out there, present ourselves to the world and saying, well, here's an opportunity for us to make money on crime worldwide. And then the problem is not being able to stop that. So the rest of the world looks at South Africa and says, okay, yes, we know there's a cyber crime problem, or there's a financial crime problem. There's difficulties in that country, so we greylist them. Being greylisted means, you know, that immediately affects me as a citizen. It affects you. The repo rate goes up. Taxes are being increased, etc. And we, at the end of the day, are paying for it without really knowing that I was involved at some point by just sticking a flash drive into my computer.
So are you saying that our most sensitive information as individuals and the most sensitive information in the judicial and in the legal and in the policing systems and in home affairs, it's all compromised?
Absolutely. It's compromised. First of all, because we do not really understand how this took place. In 90% of the cases, we do not even know that it's happened. You must understand that the dumb criminal goes and steals your credit card information and goes and uses it and buys himself a toy, whatever the case is, and he's won once. The smarter criminal does not notify you. He does not let you know he's got your information, and he will use that information, you know, on a bigger scale to access every aspect of your life in order to, you know, commit those crimes. And the problem is, as I said, we all think of crime affecting me. It is not just affecting me as a person. It is affecting organizations, institutions, the people that we trust with our information. That is where it's the worst affected.
What is the most damaging case of cybercrime that you personally know of, if you can tell us?
One of the most common ones we know of is it's not that much, but one of the most common ones that's already publicly known is NSFAS, the National Student Financial Aid Scheme. We're sitting with ghost students. Now, you can imagine at the 41 billion rand budget, if a portion of those students, now let's just look at where's the money going to. Always follow the flow of money. You remember, it's not the student coming out committing this crime. You come out of school, you've got matric, you now need to go to university and you want to study. So you as a student do not really have the ability, or, you know, you don't have all the connections in, let's say, home affairs, in this class, universities, etc. You don't have all those connections as a student. But now you're sitting with a cartel that would take this opportunity, and when the moment you go for your ID, you know, we're going to give you two IDs. We're going to give you the same photo, a slight difference in your name, different ID number, and you're alive. Now you've got two ID numbers. You're going to take those two ID numbers and you're going to go to the university. You're going to apply to be accepted at the university. Now, for both those ID numbers to be accepted at the university, you need somebody there to assist you. Once you've been accepted at the university, you can now go to the National Student Financial Aid Scheme and say, please, can I have some money to sponsor me? I'm going to need somebody there to also, you know, help me with that. But as I said, where does that money go to? A portion goes to sustenance, transportation, books, education, but the majority of that funds goes towards accommodation. So now you've got an accommodation drive where whoever started this needs to have access. He needs to have somebody at Home Affairs to assist in creating the ID. He needs to have somebody in the university to allow the student, you know, to study on two or three or four or five or multiple IDs. The same applies for the funding. And the same applies now, obviously, because that fund ultimately ends up at some accommodation place or some place. Now, from what we know already, you've got some of these organizations making, you know, borrowing that money out. We're talking hundreds of millions using it to borrow money out. We've got, we are aware of, you know, buildings being bought, massive buildings being bought, then being utilized back into the system to rent it out for more accommodation. So it's a big money making thing. That is just one example. That is a university or the National Financial Aid Scheme, a student scheme. So that is one example. If you look at how cartels are using this even in getting access to information of a criminal being investigated, for instance, by the police. Let's say the Hawk is investigating me for some or another cyber crime. You now have criminal cartels coming in, making use of this information, gaining access to systems, and using that information to either go after you, liquidate you. You know, they get now clear access to every criminal element that you have had as a criminal. They've got access to your connections, they've got access to your friends in that world, whether it is being leaking your bank statement, whether it is being, you know, finding information that they should not get on you. You've now got access to other criminal networks, and that is what your cartels are growing on, is the ability to find those elements in the society that has got certain accesses, and they will target them, infiltrate them, use that information against them, whether it is for blackmail, whether it is for whatever malicious intent. The criminals that we now have in South Africa, as I said, is no longer, you know, somebody just trying to steal your information. We all have the idea that hacking is somebody hacking into my bank account and stealing my money. That does not happen, Chris. Our financial institutions are secure. Our financial systems are secure. It is everything around that that is now being manipulated, utilized, used by very serious criminals who know that South Africa does not have the ability to stop this.
That's what I was going to ask you. What can be done to stop it or mitigate it at least?
Yeah, it's going to have to start with regulation. There's a lot of regulation that's been created. We look at, Electronic Communications and Transactions Act of 1998. We look at, you know, RICA. Most people don't understand why they're RICA. The ICA in RICA is Interception of Communications Act. It gives you give the government permission to access your communications, your systems, anything, record a phone call if need be. Now, you're sitting with a problem where if they have access to that, everybody else has access to that.